Welcome to Parents' Perspective. "I just can't get on that airplane," wailed Karen, clinging to her dad. Her eyes glistened, her palms were wet, and she felt herself breaking into a cold sweat. "I don't know how I'll get to Grandma's, but please don't make me fly." What is the difference between a stressful reaction and a real panic attack? How should parents respond to a child's anxiety? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guests work with both children and adults with anxiety issues. Ellen Applebaum is a licensed clinical social worker who works with children, adults, and family groups with stress and anxiety problems. We're glad to have you with us, Ms. Applebaum.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Mark Nemeroff is a clinical psychologist in private practice and a faculty member at George Washington University and the Washington School of Psychiatry. He is the author of two recent books for children and the father of a college-age son. Welcome, Dr. Nemeroff.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Nemeroff, what are indications of anxiety in children?
There are several symptoms that are important, and then I'll give you an example. One is obviously a great deal of worrying or apprehensiveness. Another is a keyed-up quality that sometimes we forget to consider might be part of anxiety. Anxious children become easily fatigued. That's because they're on worry overload, which takes a lot of energy. They have trouble concentrating. That's in children who are capable of concentrating. And the on button seems to go off at school. They're very irritable. They're tense. Their muscles are tense. What they might say is their hand hurts from holding the pencil so tight, whereas ordinarily they wouldn't. There's a sleep disturbance very often, either trouble falling asleep or restless sleep or waking up early. And the kicker in it all, the vicious symptom, is that anxious children worry about being anxious. And so, you know, I think of a 9-year-old boy who was very fretful. He was afraid of taking math tests and knew his math really well. He was worried about what other kids thought about him. He was afraid of being angry. And then on top of that, his big worry was that the other kids would laugh at him because he was worried.
That really is a vicious cycle.
Yes.
Dr. Nemeroff, what is the difference between anxiety and depression in children?
Now, they often overlap,
yes.
So that's very important. But I think of anxiety as characterized by worry and depression characterized by sadness, but depression manifests itself in a variety of ways in children. That's different than it is for adults. Children won't always tell you that they feel blue. They won't use that phrase anyway. Or that they're sad. They certainly won't say that they're depressed. You may notice that they're sad. They may say that they want to die. I know some 10-year-olds who have written wills and 6-year-olds who have given away their dolls. There's poor appetite or there's overeating, low self-esteem, often feelings of hopelessness. A youngster can come in and you're trying to be helpful and he'll say, "Oh, nobody can help me. I know they can't." They withdraw from family or friends and what relationships remain begin to deteriorate.
It's important to remember also that anxiety is often a feeling of not being in control, that the worry is bigger than we are, the feared situations are bigger than we are, and that pervasive sense of not being in control, that sense of real powerlessness, can lead to feeling depressed. And out of that, depression is avoiding school, avoiding interactions with peers. So it's important to watch for those symptoms of anxiety before they turn into a depression. I can often see in my office a child who's 13 or 14 who's depressed, who really has had a history for several years of being worried about the world, experiencing the world as a scary place, avoiding situations, and that has turned into, as they've reached adolescence, more of a depression. And at that point, it's a little more complicated because we really are treating, you know, different issues, an anxiety and a depression.
Ms. Applebaum, don't all children experience stress? What's normal?
Absolutely. All kids experience stress just as adults should. If we walk off a sidewalk into a street and we see a car coming, we should get anxious. We should be scared. But there's times when stress can become beyond what's helping us function every day. What's normal? Kids are going to be nervous about what's happening at school. Kids are going to be nervous about what this peer said and what that peer said and how to manage who's your best friend and who's not your best friend. Kids can also get stressed about schoolwork and expectations from teachers and parents. It's when the stress begins to build up so that it's impacting on every day and that it's impacting on their relationships with their peers, with their parents, and their schoolwork, that parents should begin to be concerned.
It's sort of a pervasive thing. It sort of
absolutely
enters every,
absolutely.
Every
when you can step back and say, how is this impacting on the daily living in a way that it's consuming time, it's making a child avoid situations that would be appropriate for a peer to engage in, that's when a parent can become concerned. Be careful to manage your child's time so that they do have time, that one of the tasks they're learning is not just how to have, you know, fun with their peers and to get their work done, but really also how to relax, how to give themselves time, how to be quiet with themselves, with their body, to not always be revved up. And like Dr. Nemiroff said, kids who are anxious are kind of always revved up. They're always running a little bit faster than other kids, and teach kids how to just be quiet, how to read a book, how to do something quiet, and help them learn that they can calm their bodies down too.
I would add to that that the times we live in contribute to stress. We have many more working mothers, two-parent working families. It's much harder to say, go out and play. And so we have youngsters who, of necessity, have to be scheduled. So on Wednesday they have karate, and on Thursday they have piano. Mm-hmm. And there's very little time, as you say, then simply to be.
In terms of parents being able to ease normal stress, besides helping children learn how to relax, are there other things parents should think about doing to be helpful?
Absolutely. One thing that we're teaching our kids in leading a hectic life or just with a kid who is anxious is, what kind of outlook are you teaching kids? That kids who are anxious or kids who experience a lot of stress are experiencing the world as a scary place, as a place that might be a little too overwhelming, that tasks are a little bit bigger than they are capable of handling. And certainly the outlook that you give your child, that the world is basically a safe place, that each person is basically capable of handling what life has to give them, that's an important lesson in terms of outlook and how do we manage the challenges that really can come our way.
Dr. Nemiroff, what is the difference between being stressed and having an anxiety disorder?
I think of being stressed as being a physical reaction, physiological reaction, and anxiety as being about something that has some meaning. So that, for example, a 9-year-old boy who was living at home with an older retarded sister and whose dad had just lost his job became very fretful at school. His grades started to fall. He would do the work, and he knew the work, and he would then rip up his papers. And he became afraid of a variety of different things, including doing well in baseball or taking the elevator to high floors. I thought this was most interesting. And what we would do is talk some, and then we would walk around. And at one point, we went into the elevator in the office where I was seeing him, and I asked him which floor we should go to. He said 3. I said, well, what about 5? He said, now, I can't go that high. And I asked him why that should be. He said, oh, something bad would happen. And what happened, he was worried that he would exceed his father and that that would be a bad thing to do to his daddy, or that he would be better than or more competent than his retarded sister whom he loved.
Oh, my.
And after he said that, he turned to me and said, Dr. Nemiroff, is that part of the puzzle of why I'm so worried?
Wow. What is a panic attack?
A panic attack is an overwhelming experience of panic, of feeling literally like you're going to die, like you are being suffocated, like your heart is pounding so fast. It's very much a physiological sensation with cognitive thinking that this is the end. I cannot possibly cope with this experience. And when young children have, well, young children being elementary school age children, have panic attacks, they really get the sensation that they are out of control of their experience and what is going to happen to them. And the task is for them to master those experiences that are anxiety producing, to let them know that they can conquer that feeling of pending panic and manage that.
Dr. Nemiroff, what kinds of behavior management can parents employ to help anxious children?
There are two verbal techniques that I particularly like. One is helping a child imagine what he's worried about and then backing up almost visually as far as you can get to where the youngster feels unscared or unworried, and then imagining step by step, slowly, closer and closer, so that the youngster's anxiety is less as he gets closer to what's bothering him. Another technique I like is called imagining the worst, and that would be sitting down with a youngster who's worried about failing a math test and saying, well, let's suppose that you failed. Oh, it would be terrible. What would happen? My teacher wouldn't like me anymore. Well, suppose that happened. Then what would happen? And at a certain point, that sounds like they would rev up. In fact, they calm down because they come up against a wall of, it doesn't go any farther. And the thinking, the anxious thinking, stops. I think there are also a couple of techniques that are useful both in stress and anxiety. One is teaching a youngster mindful breathing, which is a very slow inhalation through the nose and an exhalation of breath through the mouth, and to repeat that several times, and it has an almost an automatic calming effect. And the other is a progressive relaxation of the muscles from the toes all the way up to the tip of the head, which sounds like you can't do it, but you can. And when you do that with a youngster lying on the floor with him, he'll almost fall asleep.
Do parents need a special kind of training to help do this?
Absolutely not. You just begin, you think about the muscle in your toe, and you flex it. You would flex your toe at any point, and then you relax it, and you have your youngster do that. And then you flex your ankle, and you relax it. Then you flex your toe and your ankle, your toe, your ankle, your leg, and on up through the body, including the neck and the arms and the shoulders. And it just follows in a logical progression. It shouldn't be done too tightly, and it shouldn't be done excessively long. Two or three repetitions at each point in the body should be enough.
In terms of behavior management that parents can help kids take with them to the bus stop or on the bus or some other place where there are people, are there things that parents can do to help that?
I think the breathing is one, because you can do that secretly. I do it all the time in meetings where I'd rather not be there. And sometimes in very young children, you can give them a magic feather. If you remember Dumbo, who was afraid that he couldn't fly, and the crows gave him a magic feather, which of course didn't do anything, but holding on to it and knowing that he had it gave him the confidence to be able to do what he needed to do.
It's important as a parent for you to feel like you can master the anxiety with your child, and not, it's easy for parents, without really even thinking, to collude with the child's anxious thinking out of really the most genuine reasons of being nurturing. The example I like to use is there was a child who was anxious, and he and his parents would have an elaborate ritual every night of getting the scorpions out of the bed. They would shake the sheets, they would look under the bed, and it was actually a very nice way that they had this little ritual before going to bed. It was a very special time for them. But what it was doing was saying there's something to be afraid of, that scorpions could be in the bed, and that's the very subtle thinking that parents may be colluding with the worry without really even realizing it. And sometimes coming and talking with a professional just to get some insight on where that colluding is happening, and to help with that switch. With this family in particular, we still made sure they had a really positive, nurturing bedtime ritual, but one that didn't reinforce the idea that there was something to be afraid of in the bed before you go to sleep.
My oldest son used to keep his two younger brothers out of his room because he told them there's a man in the closet. Well, they're all grown up. They're all in their 20s now, and the younger ones don't like to use the older one's room. He no longer lives at home because they tell me there's a man in the closet, you know. He's very old, that man. Been there a long
Sometimes
time.
Sometimes also you can use humor as long as you strike while the iron is cold and not in the midst of the youngster's anxiety. For example, going into bed and there is a little less anxiety, and you might wonder with your child whether there might be baby monsters under the bed who are afraid of the people who are above them in the bed.
I often, with kids who experience anxiety, give them a technique where they come up with their own personal statements. And what we usually do is we write them on a card, a little card like a business size card, and they carry them in their pockets. And one child I worked with who was having panic attacks had two statements. One was, I can control the feeling. And the other was, I am not a doofus. And he stuck with these messages. And whenever he was getting a sensation, which he identified as the pre-feeling, he would say his messages to himself. And he knew that his card was in his pocket. And that was his way of, again, taking over some mastery, sensing that he was in control, that he was able to calm his body down when he was starting to feel out of control.
Is this something you can teach children about what the pre-feeling is to identify?
Absolutely. I think that part of understanding your anxiety is understanding how your body starts to feel revved up, to look at what's happening in your body. And then the other piece of it is to look at how you're looking at things, what your thoughts are. Are you creating the most accurate picture of what's really happening? What is the true meaning underneath that? Some of what Dr. Nemiroff talked about what was really the fear of getting to a higher level on the elevator. And some of the cognitive pieces with some of the more physical, how are you experiencing and mastering the feelings of anxiety in your body, are absolutely skills that kids can be taught.
Ms. Applebaum, what should be the first step parents take if they suspect an anxiety problem?
Well, I think the first step would be not to collude with the anxiety, the child who's having panic attacks at school or just feeling like they can't go to school because something's going on, to not support they're not going to school, to really help them go through those situations that they're trying to avoid and not create acceptance around the worry or around the avoiding. And certainly when the anxiety is impacting on daily living in a way that it's impacting on family functioning, it's impacting on schoolwork, it's impacting on their interactions with peers, it's helpful to come in and meet with a professional and get a perspective from them of what is going on. And some of that might be some assistance in perspective and some coaching about how to help your child manage that anxiety. It doesn't have to be a long-term treatment. It can be some education and perspective for the parent and for the child to help them through that situation.
Sometimes also, along the lines that Ellen is saying, it helps parents to know which worries are developmentally normal at certain ages.
Absolutely.
So that a 4-year-old who says, I hate you, is like a 4-year-old who says, I hate you. When my son was 4 years old, he fired me. He said, you're no longer my daddy. I'm getting a daddy who will say yes.
Smart kid.
Beginning of a businessman.
That's right.
Dr. Nemiroff, what kinds of treatments are offered for children with anxiety disorders?
I'm glad you asked, and we have an opportunity today because you have two very different perspectives here that are represented. For young children, I like to use play therapy, in which a youngster plays out his worries. Young children use language differently than the way adults do, and they more naturally express themselves through play. And so the play therapist will play with the youngster, watch what's going on, and try to interpret it, make sense of it in terms of the child's worries and his daily concerns and the underlying worry in the example that I gave you before. That's based on the idea that anxiety is attached to meaning and that the child's worries are meaningful. So that you might find a youngster, I did find a youngster who was 5 and a very worried child who managed his anxiety by working himself up into tizzies. And what he would do in the playroom was take the dinosaurs and work them up into tizzies. He named them Brian and Scott. I never saw dinosaurs named Brian and Scott. I thought it was much nicer than T-Rex or Godzilla. But he would do that, and he seemed driven to do that, as if there were no alternative or something dreadful would happen if he stopped. And so I asked him, I said, what would happen if the dinosaurs stopped running around like that? And he was kind of taken up short and looked puzzled. He said, oh, my mommy would die. And from there, we could try to understand where this came from and what this was about, so that the anxious busyness had meaning that needed to be understood.
My perspective is a little bit different, but I think it reaches the same goal of finding out what the meaning is, what the underlying fear is. The way I work with kids is on a cognitive behavioral therapy. And what we're doing is we're challenging the fears, we're establishing a fear hierarchy, and we're learning techniques to cope with the worry and challenge those things that we're avoiding or that we're afraid of. So part of it is behavioral, learning ways to manage our anxiety in order to accomplish those things that are fearful to us or that we avoid. And the other piece is looking at the cognitive piece and finding out what that fear underneath it is. What is the ultimate fear? Are they afraid of being embarrassed? Are you afraid of dying? Are you, as an example, afraid of your mother dying? And finding out what the meaning is of that and figuring out if the way you're looking at the picture is the most accurate way. So the treatment is partly behavioral and partly cognitive. And out of the process, the child is given tools and a way of looking at their thinking that empowers them over their anxiety.
If you don't do play therapy with children, how do you get at what it is that's troubling them?
Often we might do play, and often we might, you know, work with the parents in setting up a behavioral plan, a behavioral structure. And a lot of it, it's teaching. And, you know, what I say a lot with the kids is that I'm the coach. And what we do is every week we come back and have a huddle. And we talk about what's going on and we come up with a game plan for the week. So we're communicating in a way that a child understands it through their language. And we're achieving the same end.
Would each of you suggest materials or resources perhaps that parents might be able to turn to when they're looking to solve some problems?
The Anxiety Disorders Association of America in Rockville, Maryland is a good first place for parents to contact for information about anxiety disorders in children and what the treatment recommendations are. The phone number to reach them is 301-231-9350.
You want to repeat that?
301-231-9350.
Dr. Nemiroff has a couple of books out, we know, that could be very helpful to children. One of them is called Help is on the Way, a child's book about ADD, learning disorders. And the other one is Why Am I an Only Child? And I think there's a third one about
play therapy. A child's first book about play therapy.
And I'm sure there are a lot of other books that you can locate in libraries with good recommendations from children's librarians.
Linda, I would also suggest going to the children's section and taking a good look at the children's books rather than simply the self-help books, because many of these stories are written sometimes intuitively and sometimes unintentionally speaking to children's worries.
One thing that might be helpful to parents, if you guys could give us some ideas, is when they need to find somebody for a child, where should they go?
I think the first place to start is by asking someone you know and trust. Most often that's the pediatrician.
The Psychological Association will have a chapter locally, or the Clinical Social Work Association will have a chapter locally, and they would be able to refer you to people who specialize in anxiety disorders with children. Often school counselors might be able to hook you up with agencies or private practitioners who have specialties in that, and it would be worth your effort in asking that the clinician have experience working with anxiety in children, and ask them about their experience and how they do it so that you can feel confident that you're putting your child in the right hands.
And you don't have to take the first one that you talk to, right?
Absolutely. It has to be a good fit.
No, you have to be ready to start over and pay very close attention to the chemistry you feel that you have with the practitioner and especially that your child has with the practitioner.
We are grateful to Ellen Applebaum and Dr. Mark Nemiroff for your advice and insight. You've helped alleviate some of our anxieties today. I'm sure some of other parents, too. We have a gift for caller number 5 on our listeners' poll, an autographed copy of Dr. Mark Nemiroff's book for children, Help is on the Way. To answer today's question, coming up next, please call us at 1-800-791-8573 and give us your response.
What has been your most successful method of alleviating your child's stress? To answer, call us at 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you Dr. Nemiroff's book this week and to use some of your comments on the air. So please leave your name and phone number if you would like us to call you back. You can also reach us by email at parentspur@aol.com or through your local station. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.